You are listening to Phil Hewlett and Friends. I'm Phil Hewlett. I thank you for tuning in. This is the talk show where you get nothing but fun, informative, sometimes unexpected conversation about the stories you care about. You'll hear from the experts, authors, and others. And we hope to put a little smile on your face along the way. On today's show, just when your kid built up a sufficient amount of hate for the SAT, there's a new, more difficult version coming. If you love your drone, it could get a lot tougher to be an idiot with it. Plus, there's now an Uber-like app for potheads. We'll tell you about it. Let's meet the friends. Earning her keep today, it's our producer, Brooke Peterson. All right, that's a real quiet microphone right there, isn't it? All right, we'll get back to Brooke in a moment.
Buttons on.
Yeah, that's right. And ladies, he'll love you even if you already have a kid. Here's Chris Martin.
Phil, I have a clear winner for today's ba-ba-da-ba, Mother of the Week.
I can't wait to meet her. Hey, Brooke, how's it going over there? Nothing.
Here, try this one. Try this one. Let's see if this one works.
Slide on over.
Let's see.
All right, so this is
testing, testing. There
we go. This is proof that we do this in a live environment. We're not going to even attempt to edit this out.
Hello?
Hey, what?
Hello?
What was your headline? You want to attempt it now?
Any excuse to sit closer to me, Phil. You see that?
Yeah, exactly.
Thanks, Mike. He worked it out with me. If you think the new $15 an hour minimum wage is extravagant, you're going to want to hear about the new minimum base salary of a Seattle company and probably want to work for it.
Oh, probably not. It's not around here. That'd be quite a commute for me. All right, let's get things rolling, and thanks again for tuning in. I'm Phil. Hi, how are you? We're getting real close. You know what? We've almost done 200 programs. We're in the stretch, the home stretch to 200 programs. And let's see, what have we achieved? We have you for a listener, and that's about really all I ever wanted to do.
Yeah.
Was to just make you happy. How do you feel about that? You feel good? You feel better now? You prepared to listen to this program? Good. Let's start with you, Brooke, and get things rolling. Uh-huh. How much money can I make if I move to Seattle?
$70,000 as a base. And this includes customer service reps, clerks, minimum base salary for every single person in this company.
Instead of minimum wage, which there may be some jobs that would qualify for minimum wage at that company, I would imagine.
Probably so, yeah. But they were talking about, first of all, this company is Gravity Payments. And this is a company that helps, it's a credit card payment processing company.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, so maybe they don't have a lot of people that just push brooms at a credit payment company.
Well, it says that 70 employees' salaries will grow right off the bat, and 30 of them will ultimately be doubling their salaries.
Huh.
So that's at least 100 different people involved in this.
This real smart businessman running that company?
Well, this guy, he started this company at 19. He's been doing it about 10 years now. He was earning a salary of $1 million a year.
Oh, so he's got bank.
He's got it packed away. Yes. However, he read this article. He read some article talking about how people's income affects their happiness. And apparently the $70,000 is this median number that delineates between very happy people and significantly less happy people. And above $70,000 apparently is not that big of a gain in happiness, but below $70,000 there is a significant difference. And so he is reducing his own salary to cover the cost of upping his employees'
salary. How much
salaries.
Is he reducing his salary?
He's going down to $70,000.
No way,
yeah,
really?
He's going from $1 million to $70,000 to cover the spread. And also,
so $70,000 is the benchmark for happiness?
Yeah.
Essential happiness?
Well, yeah. So you can be happy under $70,000, I'm sure. But apparently there's a significant rise in happiness, jump in your happiness level after the $70,000.
All right, so his employees are happy, but they're not necessarily more productive. I'm just thinking, if you pay somebody more than what their job would typically earn, you know, based on their skill set, and would somebody potentially become complacent? Now, they don't have the carrot ahead of them of the good old getting ahead, you know, where you say, okay, if I work real hard, I get real good at this job, I learn a little bit of the next job, I jump up to the next job, I make more money. There's that incentive there. It's a little like, you know, when the teachers go on strike and they say, you know what, let's pay a bunch of bad teachers a lot more money because it's good for the kids. And you know, the teachers don't get any better. They just make more money.
But I can also see these employees becoming lifelong loyal employees that would probably
lay
down in front of a train for this guy.
You would think that would happen, yeah. But you know what? Human nature, I think you get to the point where, well, you know, I'm entitled to that money and I don't really all have to work all that hard because here I am pushing a broom and I'm making as much money as the guy that's got a fancy computer and a window at his desk. You know what I mean?
Out of the gate, you would probably show your appreciation by working really hard for the first however long, you know, maybe a year or something. And then, of course, you lose it. You're going to settle down. Well, you know, you're going to meet the demands of your job, maybe not exceed them.
You ever see a pro basketball player?
I think it's a good idea. I'm surprised this guy had to read an article to figure out that more money makes people happier.
Yeah, you know,
isn't that kind of...
Well, it's degrees, also, right,
yeah,
Brooke?
Well, it's also the economic disparity between CEOs and everybody else. And he was just saying, his idea is just that it's ridiculous how much CEOs get paid. Of course, other CEOs are not happy that this is happening.
Yeah. Well, you know, people have that opinion. Here's the way I see it. A CEO very often is the top sales guy at the company.
Sure.
Right? And
yeah.
The top sales guy. And as a sales guy, you're making a commission. Right. And when you're in sales, commission kind of opens up the ceiling and sky's the limit if you sell a bunch of stuff. Now, if you're the top sales guy at the company, it stands to reason you'd make the most money. But in many cases, when you look at the perks and the money that the CEO of a company gets, then his commission or her commission tends to be just like a hundredth of a penny on the dollar. As opposed to what the regular salespeople are making, they might be making 10, 15 cents on a dollar commission. You know what I mean? So what I'm saying is the CEO in many cases is underpaid.
You could argue that. I mean, once you break that $1 million mark or say you're making $500,000, it really doesn't matter what you do. Your time is pretty valuable at that point.
Sure, sure. And it's just weird. You know, when you make more money, you think, hey, I'm doing great. I'm making more money. Look, it's going to be fantastic. And then a year later, crap, I can't pay my bills.
Yeah. You always live.
You
remember that commercial?
Grow into that money.
There was a commercial of a guy. He goes, I just bought a new boat. And it's sitting in his driveway. And he goes, and I love my new car. And there's a Mercedes. And then he's driving around on his lawn tractor. And he says, and I'm in debt up to my eyeballs.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
you know, right. Some credit commercial, of course.
Sure.
You always push the limits of your means, no matter how much
you
make.
Well, I'd be interested to revisit this company in 6 months to a year and see if anything has changed, if things have gotten good. I was going to say, have you ever seen a pro basketball player talk to a referee?
Yeah.
Do you
yes, I don't know if you could call that talking.
Now these guys, I don't know that they're worth, you know, $10 million a year. They're entertainers, and okay, fine, they're bringing in the bucks for the owner. But they're talking to a guy who's making $80,000 to $120,000, who's supposedly in charge of the game, but the dude who's making $10 million is talking to the dude who's in charge, who makes a great deal, towering over him.
Yeah.
And so
twice the size.
Yeah, so it's one of those weird dynamics. And so when you're at the company where everybody makes 70 grand, and the dude who formerly was making 18 grand is now talking to the guy that formerly was making 100 grand, and they're both making the same money.
Does it work that way? I don't think they're cutting other people's salaries.
Oh, they're not.
He cut his own salary. His name, by the way, is Dan Price. He cut his own salary.
Price.
Yeah, but the guy making 60 is now making 70, and the guy making 18 is now making 70. So
correct.
I'd like to hear that conversation between those two guys.
Well, if they're making 18, they're a part-time employee anyway. That's below minimum wage anywhere.
Their average salary was 48. And so now, so it was significantly less, but it wasn't necessarily.
Well, it sounds like a good company to work for.
It sounds pretty exciting.
Unless you're already making more than that.
Of course, you have to move to Seattle.
They can continue to make more than that. They're not cutting those salaries. He just took out his own salary.
Okay.
Settle down, folks.
Enough of these guys. But yeah, enough of this. But I want, if I wanted some weed and I wanted it fast.
That'll calm us down.
And I don't want to pay 70 grand for it. Can't I just get an app?
Yes, you can, Phil.
Can a fella get an app? what is this?
It's called Ease.
Ooh.
Ease for weed.
Okay. And what does it do?
And it's very similar to an Uber. I don't think Uber owns it. It's an Uber-like app where you have these pictures. It's like a map-based looking app where you can sort of see where your weed is on its route to you. You can shop for different varieties of weed and then choose which one. But apparently, according to the author of the article I read. He was disappointed in the limited selection of the weed.
Oh.
And that he had to only be able to pay cash. He couldn't use anything
Ungrateful
else.
Brat. Come
I
on.
I know. It was showing up at his door in less than 15 minutes, and he was complaining.
I love the tracking. It'd be like, your weed is 5 miles. Oh, never mind. It just stopped at Del Taco.
Yeah. All right. You better have the proper credentials to purchase that weed in your state.
On demand.
Because I imagine that if you could track where your weed is, the authorities can also track where the weed is.
Well, that's the thing. So, theoretically, this is supposed to be for medical marijuana patients, but how? I don't think they're checking. I don't think they're making sure that they're using it for medicinal purposes.
Yeah, yeah. One of the greatest hoaxes ever, and not to say that there aren't people who benefit from marijuana medicinally, but one of the greatest hoaxes ever. Just an opportunity for people who don't need it medicinally to get it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. In the comfort of their own home.
Just the way I see it.
Well, yeah. If you looked at it from, I guess, the proponent's standpoint, they would say, well, listen, making it illegal was ridiculous in the first place. That was a big hoax.
We have a part of town you've
I'm
probably seen
I'm not a proponent,
it.
But...
In Southern California, you probably, in movies and TV shows, you've seen Muscle Beach, you know, where the guys are out there on the beach and they're working out with the barbells and all that, you know, meatheads. And that's Venice Beach. And along the boardwalk there used to be, and I don't know if there still are, a whole bunch... of medicinal marijuana shacks, mm-hmm. Stores, and there'd always be some creepy dude out there in front trying to get the tourists as they're walking by to come on inside and look at the long list of items that would qualify them to get a prescription for marijuana. And so out of curiosity, as a journalist, I went inside, and hangnail was one of the items on the list.
Hangnail?
They got this nasty hangnail.
I was with my teenage daughter at the time, and the guy started hitting on my daughter and tried to get her to come on inside so, you know, they could smoke a little wacky weed together, you know, and have a party.
Yeah.
Medicinally speaking, of course.
Of course. Yeah, of course. Well.
Got to correct that hangnail problem.
Yeah. So I know that's just a microcosm and that I'm making a massive leap to say that the entire movement is a hoax, but that's just an example that, medical marijuana, yeah, wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
It's pretty slippery, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, so up next on the program, there's more program, including Chris's founder, the mother of the week, next on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot. Available now at Walgreens.
I want to tell you about a spectacular dining experience. It's Portsacall Waterfront Dining, award-winning service and cuisine with a view of the dynamic L.A. Harbor from every seat. Enjoy daily sunset specials, as well as the South Bay's best bottomless champagne brunch. The outdoor harborside patio is a perfect setting for happy hour every weekday from 3 to 8. Portsacall Waterfront Dining. For reservations and directions, visit portsacalldining.com or call 310-833-3553. Thanks for tuning in. It's Phil Hewlett and Friends. And oh, Chris Martin, I think you found her, huh? This is some lady. She's a work of something. What'd you say?
Yeah. And I wouldn't call it art.
No?
No.
She's a piece of something.
Yeah.
You want to tell us about your mother of the week?
Mother of the week. So imagine this. You're at the Cleveland Zoo. It's a mother and two children. She's there with her two kids. They're checking out the cheetah pit.
An outing.
Yes. Out for an outing, you know, swinging around on the hands, checking out all the animals. They're over at the cheetah pit, and mom wanted her two-year-old son to have a better look at the cheetahs.
Okay.
I think you can see where this might be going.
I don't know where it's going, but
so
I hope it is.
She picked up her two-year-old son. She's got her other child still in tow. So imagine you've got, you know, one child down at the grasp of your hands. You're picking the other one up waist high and held him over the cheetah fence to have him get a better look and dropped him.
Oh, no.
10 feet
Whoa.
To the pit below.
Whoa.
Were these hungry cheetahs?
Well, we'll get to that. The
how
witnesses,
okay.
How do you do that? You know, and by the way, if you want a vision, just remember back when Michael Jackson was hanging the kid over to the balcony, it's probably
and the entire
something.
World went,
similar to that. And speaking of which, all of the witnesses there began to scream. They were horrified, obviously. The kid's leg was busted. It's a 10-foot fall.
Oh,
that's a long way to go. Even if you're a flexible 2-year-old. Some hero, of course, jumped into the pit to rescue the child. And the cheetahs attacked and mauled them both.
Really?
No, just kidding.
Come on.
No, the cheetahs didn't want anything to do with them. They stayed over into their corner. I don't think cheetahs are very vicious animals like that on the regular, and then let alone when you're in a pit.
They want to be able to chase you down at 70 miles per hour.
That's, yeah, it's no fun simple. If you're just laying there. Yeah. And so the cheetahs didn't make any attempt to interact. But here's the interesting part. After the zoo closed the exhibit for the day, they've decided they're now going to press charges against the mother for intentionally dangling her child over the edge.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure I should be a mother just to do it better than her.
There you go. I agree. Yeah, so you can get Mother of the Week
but for
different reasons.
Press charges.
Exactly, for good reasons.
What law exactly has she broken other than ridiculously poor parenting skills?
Good question, Phil. But if you think about putting others at risk, don't forget one of the other patrons jumped into the pit, and they had to get firemen in there to sort of calm down the event, double-check everything, the safety of everything. They had to close down the exhibit for the day, clean up the pit, whatever paperwork
follow, all
of that
child
stuff
endangerment.
Is that a crime punishable? Maybe, I guess, the child endangerment, sure. But all that other stuff, you just charge her get some local magistrate to charge her a fine, a penalty, to pay off all those people for their efforts, right?
I agree. I mean,
and
maybe
and
that's what
banned from the zoo forever.
Mm-hmm. Yes, you can no longer come see the monkeys,
right?
And zebras
and cheetahs for that,
and lions and tigers,
you know,
and bears. Oh my!
I may have found a new boyfriend for this lady.
Oh, cool!
Because I imagine that the husband is long gone. For the past few months, Justin Bieber has been on his best behavior, but apparently that came to a crashing halt Sunday night. TMZ is reporting this, and usually they're right. I got to admit. I mean, they nail it.
Yeah.
TMZ reports that Justin was thrown out of Coachella. That's like the whole area?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Indeed.
Or just the festival. Supposedly, he was trying to force his way into the VIP area near where Drake was performing. But Drake, very popular rap, hip-hop singer, star.
We refer to him as Drizzy.
Drizzy?
Phil.
Okay.
Yeah.
But poor Justin was told he couldn't go in because it was already at capacity. So he didn't like that. He whined that Drake had invited him to be in the area and said that he couldn't go out and stand with the rest of the crowd because he'd be swarmed by fans. But security didn't budge. And when Justin tried to go in anyway, security grabbed him. Put him in a chokehold.
Yeah.
And then
I'd love to see a picture of that.
Then had him and his entourage escorted out of the festival. So there. Naturally, Justin's people are threatening legal action and threatening to dangle somebody over a cheetah pit.
Right.
And it's a shame because this guard that put him in a chokehold, in my opinion, is an American hero.
So you're a big fan.
Justin hasn't commented publicly on this just as of yet, but hey, he will eventually.
I'm sure it's all one big misunderstanding.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it is. I wonder if, did Justin Bieber buy his, remember when Taylor Swift and Microsoft bought up all the possible names, .porn?
Well, if they're
Taylor
smart,
Swift then was involved in that?
Well, not involved, but she said she didn't want anybody making a .porn website of herself, so she just bought the domain names so she could just, vault them
defense.
Away.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like, you could buy chrismartin.porn and
check.
Do with it. Do with it as you like. But it's expensive, though. I mean, it's like big-time expensive.
Is it? I thought it was just like, I think it's like $100 a year to keep
it. I heard it was like a couple grand, depending on what the name is.
Just for the initial
purchase?
Could
be $250,000.
Really?
Like TaylorSwift.porn is not cheap. If you just try to buy a .com and it's a common name or phrase, .com, it might be $4,000 a year. If it's just something that you made up, like dangling over a cheetah pit .com, that's not a common phrase. It probably costs you $10 a year.
Right.
All right?
Yeah.
But eatenbycheetahs.com might cost you $1,000 a year.
Maybe it was for them because I think there's this company that has these like .porn, .adult domain extensions, whatever they're called. And they apparently give trademark holders the first rights to buy these names for
rather
themselves.
Rather than holding them over the flame and say, hey, look, pay us now or you're going to pay later.
But maybe, maybe they are charging them more because they have these first rights, these first dibs.
Well, I imagine a lot of celebrities are jumping in on this as a self-preservation kind of thing, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Beyonce, of course. Yeah. Paris Hilton is the most recent
victim. She a victim of this?
No.
She is taking charge, man. She bought the domain, so
remember how rich we said
it.
She is?
Yeah.
And she already has her own videos to post for herself. So.
Oh, yes, sure.
Yeah, but she's not
she's
a party
catalog.
Girl. Not a party girl anymore, as we pointed out in a previous episode.
It's cleaning up her act.
Yeah. I don't know. I saw a picture of her at Coachella, so she looked like she's having a good time.
She was doing research for her perfume business.
And her new porn site.
Yeah. So who else? You got who else on the list? Anybody else?
Oh, and Bieber. Speaking of Bieber.
Bieber is on there.
Yeah, Beyonce, Bieber, and Hilton. Those are the three names I have listed right here in front of my face.
And not me. I dare you. Go ahead and make a Phil Hewlett porn site. Go ahead. I dare you.
Check.
Hey, did you watch the golf this weekend, Chris?
Oh, yeah. I don't miss it, man. I love me some
21-year-old kid just smokes the field.
Yeah, ran away with it, really. I mean, nobody ever got within a few shots of him. He set multiple records on the way after winning the biggest golf event of the year.
Jordan Spieth is
his name. Jordan Spieth. And what do you think he does to celebrate, Phil?
He goes to Disneyland?
He went to get some fast food.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah, he went to Chick-fil-A to get a 12-piece nugget meal.
Wow.
And that follows the tradition of a couple of previous winners, including Bubba Watson, who went to the Waffle House, and Phil Mickelson, who went to Krispy Kreme.
What?
So nobody going after a chicken teriyaki bowl afterwards. Celebrate.
Apparently not. All right. We all took the SAT, right? I think we were forced to. And just when your student was dreading having to take the SAT, or maybe dreading to take it again because he or she failed, there's a brand new version of it. What's changed and why and how does it affect your high school student? We'll find out the answers to all of those questions and perhaps more next right here on Phil Hewlett and Friends. You are listening to Phil Hewlett and Friends, and we thank you for doing that. Brooke Peterson is here. She's our producer, and she's part of the time on the program. We always love when that happens.
Thank you.
And Chris Martin is here, as usual, and you're lucky for that. Because had he known ahead of time what it was you did, he might have stayed home out of protest.
That's doubtful.
Okay. Perfect attendance over there. No. Hey, remember when you had to take the SAT? You remember that? It wasn't that long ago.
I never took the SATs.
What'd you do, ditch?
I just never took it. If I did, I don't remember it.
But you went to college.
I did. Yeah, apparently it didn't matter. I mean, I went to community college, Phil. That's like high school with ashtrays. I don't think they check your they don't check your SATs there. I did go to another college after
that. Well, I don't know. It seems to me like the whole SAT thing has become an industry, and you're required to pay your $40 and take the SAT.
Oh, I bombed mine.
Did you?
Yes. I didn't know I was supposed to study for it.
Yeah.
I didn't know that there were classes I could take to prepare. I just thought it was like one of those yearly aptitude tests that you had every year, you know, in your English classes.
Well, back in my day, it was just English and math, and I think I aced the English side, and I just did kind of like half right on the math side.
Hmm.
But it was good enough to get me into a state college.
Well, see, there you go.
Yeah.
Mission accomplished.
Anyway, it's my understanding you need it to get into a four-year college, and maybe not a community college. We'll straighten that out in a moment. But does it even do anything to prepare high school students for the college administration admissions process, that is? Joining us live to talk about this and a brand new version of the SAT is the CEO of C2 Education, David Kim. Hi, David.
Hey, Phil, how you doing?
Excellent. Even better now that you're here, sir. What first of all, is C2 Education?
C2 Education is a leading provider of academic services. So what we do is we help kids get into the college of their dreams. We provide college counseling and then everything that's required to get into a top school. So tutoring for subjects as well as test preparation like the SAT that you're talking about are critical aspects for college admissions these days, especially as things have gotten so crazy, as you know, in like the UCs and...
Sure, it's so competitive. I think crazy is probably not a harsh enough word. C2Educate.com, the letter C, the number 2, educate.com, and we have a link on our links page to your organization there. Now, David Kim, remind us again what the SAT is and why we take it.
So the SAT is kind of the college admissions test. It was basically started in the late 40s by the president of Harvard, President Conan, as a way to better determine how do we select students who don't go to kind of these prep schools in New England. So if you're in California or if you're kind of you know, a farm boy in the Midwest, you know, how do we know that you can compete with the students here? And so, you know, this test evolved as a way to really help college admissions officers level the playing field and determine that you in California had the same abilities as someone in Boston.
Yeah, the whole standardized thing, which has become kind of a bad word in the educational vernacular, it seems, of late. And I remember my SAT was pretty difficult, and these days it must still be, because there are places up and down the street that will charge you a chunk of money to teach you how to pass the test. So how difficult is the most recent edition of the SAT, and does it really do anything to prepare a college-bound student? Not the new one, but the one that we've been working with for the last few years. Does it do anything to prepare a college-bound student for what's ahead?
Yeah, so you know, the reality is you know, the test that you took and the test that exists now, the test that exists now is actually easier. And that's been, you know, a result of kind of competition between SAT and ACT. And so the test has become actually less relevant in determining college outcomes. And so you have, you know, almost, you know, 50% of students entering a four-year university not well prepared for college entry subjects, as well as not graduating within 4 years, right? The idea of a four-year college is kind of a misnomer. You know, 80% of students these days are graduating in 5 or 6 years because they aren't adequately prepared. And so that's really been the genesis for creating the new SAT, to have it become a more discriminating test that better prepares students for college-level material.
Oh, but now that's the thing that I'm trying to wrap my head around. Does the test itself prepare college students, or did the body of their educational works in high school and middle school lead them to the point where they're just going to fail a more difficult SAT, and the colleges will know they're not ready, they don't cut the mustard, they should go to the high school with ashtrays?
Yeah. Well, but the current test obviously doesn't do a good job of doing that, right? And so the new test, you know, they brought on a guy named David Coleman as president of the College Board, who was actually the creator of the Common Core standards that are, you know, pretty controversial right now with a lot of the school districts. But, you know, he's the guy that they brought on after he put a Common Core in place. And so basically the new SAT, what it's doing, it's taking those Common Core standards and kind of making a 12th grade exit test and really trying to get what students are learning in school to be accurately reflected on the new SAT, right? The old one, I mean, there's a lot of, you know, weird SAT words, and there's a lot of weird funky logic math problems that, you know, a lot of students, you know, often complain are, you know, completely unrelated to what you know, they would be learning in their normal school environment. And so, you know, one of the big knocks on the test was that it's not relevant to what I'm learning today, nor is it an indicator of what I'll be learning in college. And so they really try to flip that around and really change that. And so then your other question, you know, are schools really doing a good job to get students better prepared for this new test? Obviously, that's a very highly controversial topic, you know, that covers, you know, multiple buckets. I mean, you're talking about unions, you're talking about teachers, you're talking about, you know, kind of parental involvement, and, you know, there's a lot of stuff to unpack when you get to a topic.
And David Kim, when we talk about bringing on a more challenging test, a more difficult test, and it's a standardized test, it's the same test everybody gets all the way across the country, then all of a sudden you're going to, and you know who these people are, they're going to come out and say, hey, look, you're taking away opportunity from students who would otherwise get a good enough grade to get into a good school.
Correct. So you are having people who talk about that, and so one of the things that you know, the College Board is doing is that they're trying to partner with you know several nonprofits to provide you know, people in lower socioeconomic strata, you know, free quote-unquote SAT help. But at the end of the day, you know, that doesn't level the playing field. I totally agree with you.
Yeah. All right. Very good. So when does the new SAT become the standard?
So the new SAT is going to become the standard next spring in March and April of 2016. But the first test before that, you know, I don't know how much you remember, there's also a precursor to the SAT, the PSAT,
yes.
Which is going to sneak up on a lot of families actually this October, and that's going to be a totally new redesigned version as well.
Yeah, no, back in when I was in high school, we had this special, the pre-SAT test was show us what you can do with two rocks.
Absolutely.
And we had to create something with a couple of rocks, and then that qualified us.
So what did you create? Paperweight?
No.
That's where I would have went with it.
I made something that sent me straight to the principal's office. Yeah. All right. So thank you again. You're the CEO of C2 Education. The website is C, the letter C, the number 2, educate.com. And again, the link is on our links page at philhewlettandfriends.com. I'll talk to my kids and see what they think when I say there's a new SAT coming. And I'm going to gauge their response, David Kim. Thank you very much.
I appreciate it, Phil. Hopefully you don't go to a school with ashtrays.
Yeah. All right, good. Very good. Thanks for that. And coming up, by the way, more and more people are getting drones. They're just popular. That's the modern tech toy, right?
Mm-hmm.
But who's regulating the flight patterns of the kid down the street who keeps buzzing his drone past your bedroom window? There's an interesting idea that could just work out, and it would keep the feds out of the picture. And you'll hear about it next right here on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot, available now at Walgreens.
I want to tell you about a spectacular dining experience. It's Portsacall Waterfront Dining, award-winning service and cuisine with a view of the dynamic L.A. Harbor from every seat. Enjoy daily sunset specials, as well as the South Bay's best bottomless champagne brunch. The outdoor harborside patio is a perfect setting for happy hour every weekday from 3 to 8. Portsacall Waterfront Dining. For reservations and directions, visit portsacalldining.com or call 310-833-3553. Yes, you are navigating through this program. It's Phil Hewlett and Friends. I don't know how many propellers you have. Do you have four? You might. Because Americans seem to already be largely comfortable with drones. To me, and maybe to you as well, they're just awesome toys, aren't they? They're almost the ultimate high-tech gadget.
They're creepy, Phil.
Well, yeah, there's that. But what if I decide to go rogue with my drone and start flying over a private property and taking high-quality video of stuff that is supposed to be none of my business? Or what if I crash my drone into something or someone and I cause some damage or injure somebody? Or what if I use a drone to outright break the law? I know there's been a push to get the FAA involved with commercial drones, but I don't know. It sure seems like, to me, like something else ought to be done here with just the average, everyday drone guy. I just don't know, really. But Beverly Goodby is an attorney in Dallas with the law firm Gardere Wynn Sewell, LLP, and she joins us live to discuss an interesting idea that's out there that that may ultimately self-regulate the whole industry. But first of all, hi, Beverly. How far out of the bag is the proverbial cat here with drones?
It's pretty far out of the bag, Phil. This is a very interesting, cutting-edge issue, and I'm glad that you want to discuss it.
Well, I'm glad you're here to help us with it, because it's something we're thinking about. I mean, we all want the drone, but just imagine everybody gets a drone, and the skies are full of them, and there's no doubt one is going to fall into my swimming pool, and somebody's going to get hurt. And what are the main issues of concern, then, as you see it, that lead us to the conclusion that we need a set of rules for operating a personal or a commercial drone, for that matter?
Well, I tell you, this is really sort of a complex issue. In addition to the FAA, which is working on the issue, we also have private insurance companies who, interestingly enough, are putting together their own rules and regulations so that they're able to issue insurance policies that will insure drones.
Well, that's interesting. And they're not just jumping on the popularity of drones on the, you know, get a piece of that money. But they insure your car. They insure an airplane if you fly one. They consider whether you have a certain breed of dog in your backyard before they figure out what your homeowner's policy is. And it's essentially to insure against damaging person or property. And so why not insure drones?
Exactly. I think that's true. What's interesting to me is some of the drone insurance policies impose restrictions on drone use that are more severe even than what the FAA is proposing.
Now, explain how that works. You get the policy, they sit it down in front of you and say, okay, now here are best practices for a drone operation, and if you stray out of these guidelines, you will either A, be uninsurable, or B, will have to increase your premium 4 or 5 times.
That's really the way all insurance works. Some of these points are sort of interesting. For example, some of these policies want particular operators so that you couldn't operate one, Phil. You don't have an airworthiness.
Well, where's the fun in that?
I know. You know, it's just not like it was back when our dads used to take us out in the field and we would run our remote control toys all around.
Right. You know, exactly. But the new drones, and they get better every couple of months, it seems, they are so easy to fly. And you could put on one of those helmets and almost like will it to fly, and it'll go where you want it to with your eyeballs. I don't know how they work exactly, but it seems like they're that easy to fly, and people get real confident with them, and then they fly them right into the a window of an office building.
They do. I know you see that all the time. The biggest problem is, though, if you don't know what's in your insurance and what's covered, if a particular operator should have been running your drone, you might not have any coverage, and that could be a real problem.
Mm-hmm. Has the drone industry looked at this as a kind of self-regulation?
You know, I don't know that there is such thing as a drone industry. This is just so cutting edge right now.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a lot out there other than the FAA and the independent insurance regulations right now, at least.
Now, if the FAA gets involved, I mean, I don't know if you've considered what the possibilities are or if they've tipped their cards a little bit to let us know. Would the average consumer who buys a personal drone need to go to a school somewhere and take a course and pay a nice big fee and get licensed like somebody who flies an airplane?
Well, I'll tell you, this is very interesting. You talk about just an individual consumer. You know, have you thought about your homeowner's policy? I mean, where are you going to have coverage for this? An average homeowner's policy is going to exclude any kind of aircraft. And so it would be a real surprise if you went and bought one of these toys thinking it was going to be covered, and then it actually wasn't.
You know what's interesting, though? My homeowner's policy covers my slice off the tee at a golf course.
Yeah.
You know, if my ball goes into somebody's backyard and breaks a clay pot, it's my homeowner's policy that comes into play.
Hmm. You're right. You're right. If you look, though, there's an aircraft exclusion in most homeowner's policies.
Oh, so I can fly a golf ball, but I can't fly a drone.
You can. That is true.
Yeah.
Well, obviously you can't fly a golf ball very well either.
That's true. Exactly true. Yeah.
Uh-huh. But, and, you know, the other place you see this is in commercial general liability. If you have a company that simply wants to have one, it doesn't necessarily want to make money off of it.
Yeah.
And that's going to be prohibited too, and probably not covered in the CGL policy. And so, you know, you really have to start thinking about where you're going to go to cover your habit if you get into the drone habit.
Yeah. All right. So I'm going to imagine then that the majority of drone pilots, just regular Joes, will not be insured. And when somebody gets hurt or property is damaged, people are just going to end up in court.
Yes, well, that's good for us lawyers.
Yeah, of course it is. All right. So how do you see this shaking out? Will there be a standard?
You know, I do. Yes, I think the FAA will eventually prepare regulations that people will have to follow. If you read some reports, it is in the earliest September of 2015 we might see something like that. Mm-hmm. In the meantime, you can also seek a certificate of authorization or a special airworthiness certificate in order to operate a drone.
Right.
We're seeing some of those. And then, of course, we have this burgeoning insurance part of this where the insurance carriers are also looking ahead and trying to get into the market knowing that this drone use is going to explode here very soon.
Does size matter?
You know, size does matter.
How about for drones?
Yeah, they're looking at 55 pounds or less is what I have read.
Okay. All right, because they're starting to sell some pretty big drones out there. And,
yeah, they are, and they're really expensive, too. You know, you crash some of those things, you're going to be out a lot of money.
And they've got some of them, the new ones that are out, they have 4K cameras on them.
And they have some very expensive payloads, too. That's true.
That is right. Yes. Okay.
You've
got
to look at the liability side of this, you know. If nothing else, if you buy an expensive drone with expensive cameras like that, you're going to want to make sure that you've got an insurance for that if it crashes.
And if you break the law with your drone, and it's well known that you do that, and then you buy another drone later as the technology increases, you go to your insurance agent and says, I'm sorry, you're uninsurable. You cannot fly a drone. And then the feds say you can't fly a drone. So once you get a drone airborne and you're behind the wheel, so to speak, you are breaking federal law, I imagine. That's where it's going, right?
I tell you what, there's some really tricky rules and regulations, and you need to be really careful that you're on the good side of those.
Yeah, sounds like it. All right. Well, thanks for flying over and having this quick discussion about drones. I sure appreciate it. Beverly Goodby, thank you.
Thank you all so much. It was a pleasure.
All righty. There you go. She's in Dallas with the law firm Gardair, Wynn, and Sewell. Sounds like a nice lady. That she, if you ever were in trouble and you needed somebody to help you with the law, she'd be a good one to talk to.
Yeah, and you don't normally call lawyers nice people.
Yeah,
you know?
But she sounded like
so she's got that going for her.
Yeah, especially since she thinks a lot of lawsuits are going to come out of these drone things.
Right? Yeah, she sounds excited about it.
Yeah, I mean, it seems pretty obvious. Just the liability and faulty flying and accidental, you know, running into like some poor kid on the sidewalk or something. Oh man,
some poor kid.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
minding his own business. Now comes a drone from the sky. And
just more robots for us. You know, sooner or later we're going to be extinct. We're already on the endangered species list with all the robots coming, Chris. But there's a bunch of animals still endangered, aren't there?
Yeah, there are, and the endangered species list seems to grow every year. But right now, there's only 5 white rhinos, northern white rhinos, I should say, left in the world. These are beautiful.
Only 5 animals. In the world?
5 in the world. Now, this is northern white rhino, Phil. So there's other rhinos. There's the normal white rhino. There's the gray rhino. Although the white rhino, there's only a couple hundred of those left. Not too many black rhinos above that. So rhinos are having a hard time. And out in Africa, these northern white rhinos are on the verge of being wiped out because the ivory from these guys' horns is worth a ton of money on the black market.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, you know, all these guys get these misconceptions that if you grind up the horns and you eat it, it'll give you longer memory or longer other things.
Yeah, love you longer.
Yeah. So, but now the Kenyan Rangers have stepped in and they're out there risking their lives to protect these rhinos. They're literally guarding the last of the rhinos 24/7 on rotating shifts with armed guards.
That's awesome.
To prevent poachers from taking the lives
and
of these rhinos.
I mean, are these rhinos, are any of them sweet on each other? I mean, is there a chance that they're going to reproduce?
They're not. So far, no, because I think what's happening is all of this activity that's happening around them is sort of spooking them. And then, and here's where it gets even more interesting. Of these 5 rhinos, only one of them is a male named Sudan. 4 of them are females. He's having a hard time getting accustomed to this. They cut off his horn to protect him. They already cut off his horn as preventative care.
Jeez.
So that poachers hopefully wouldn't want him
just
for that.
Alone. Wow.
Yeah.
Poor
so,
guy.
Now they moved him over to the Czech Republic. Hopefully they get comfortable and, you know, that he tries to reproduce. But
we'll
see.
Nothing kills the libido faster than a little stress and, you know.
Yeah, and 10 guards pressure. Standing around you with, you know, automatic rifles.
And bringing one of those rhino horns to bed with you. Look, honey, look what I have. What? Okay, I'm out of here. Hey, that's it for hour one of the program. There's more to come, including who's a more important family member, your dog or your mother-in-law? You spend how much money on average to attend a wedding? And our travel guy reminisces about motels. Those stories and more in the second hour of Phil Hewlett and Friends, coming up next.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot, available now at Walgreens.
Here's a great idea for your next outing, a cruise of the L.A. Harbor on a Spirit Cruises yacht. Whether you have a large party, a company outing, wedding reception, a reunion, or you need the perfect setting for a romantic evening, Spirit Cruises offers everything you need to relax and enjoy your time on the water. For a limited time, enjoy Sunday brunch at Portsacall Waterfront Dining right next door, and the first Spirit Cruises Harbor Cruise of the day is free. For more information, call 310-548-8080 or visit spiritmarine.com.
You are listening to Phil Hewlett and Friends. This is hour two of the talk show where you get nothing but fun, informative, sometimes unexpected conversation about the stories you care about. You'll hear from the experts, authors, and others. And we hope to put a little smile on your face along the way. This hour, our travel guy talks about a dying breed. And could there be a cure for obesity? And I have two words for you. Actually, three words. Free ice cream! Now what would you pay? The friends are here, Chris Martin and our producer, Brooke Peterson. Always great to see you, too. I'm Phil Hewlett. Thanks for tuning in. So, Brooke, we're ping-ponging from star to star. We're out in space. We're spaced out.
Mm-hmm.
There are things happening in the world of privately owned space exploration today.
And we had a major success today.
Yeah.
SpaceX had a successful launch of their rocket that they are trying to get to the space station. And it was like a two-parter. They were hoping to get this launched and up to orbit and successfully. But they were also hoping to salvage a piece of the rocket launching gear.
One of the stages.
It's a stage. I think stage two.
Right.
Perhaps.
Makes sense. Stage one is the giant rocket that boosts it off the ground, and then those you typically get destroyed somewhere along the launch process, right? That's the first part to drop off.
From all that power.
Yeah.
And then the other parts, those are fuel storages too, aren't they?
Sure.
Right.
Well, the idea with them is they're trying to cut costs and make this a little bit more reasonable by being able to recycle some of their materials and launching equipment. And so the idea is to have the stage two, whatever it is, rocket detach, and basically fly itself down to a drone ship and land vertically back into position.
Gigantor style.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And they made pretty good headway in this area. It did come down. It did land on the drone ship. It was vertical. It just landed a little bit too hard.
Oh.
So it died. But, you know, that's a pretty big
That's a
game.
Lot better than the last one, which, what happened? It blew up, right?
Blew up. Yeah. Kaboom.
So they're making great strides.
Yeah. It's kind of
exciting.
Boy,
these rich guys, these billionaires who messing around with rockets and all that.
Yeah, there's a couple of different companies in the works right now. Of course, you know, Branson has his company, but most of these other people are focusing mostly on the orbit around Earth and just hoping to try to get a good system in place for lugging cargo and bringing up satellites. So
I heard story of even a giant elevator.
What?
That would, yes, get this, a giant elevator that they would build from the ground up, 22,000 miles apparently is supposed to be the perfect orbiting position for zero gravity.
What they call it, the Wonka.
Yeah,
I see a movie with George Burns or something. I don't know.
In the Willy Wonka movie, he had one of those elevators, right?
Yeah,
went all the way
into
space.
That's true. That's pretty cool.
And didn't you have to drink the fizzy pop and then you floated up the elevator?
I don't want to even know what those kids were drinking. I mean, that whole Willy Wonka thing in the chocolate factory, that guy's definitely a child pervert, isn't he?
He's a little creepy.
Something going on.
Who was creepier, Gene Wilder or
Johnny Depp?
Or Johnny Depp. Who was the creepier? Your child molester.
Gene Wilder, you cannot, there is no doing better than that acting performance that he did, but Johnny Depp was pretty creepy.
Yeah, but the look in both of their faces, they both had that child molester thing going, right?
A little twisty thing going
Didn't
on.
They?
I think so.
Watch either one of those movies now from that perspective. And
no, don't. Don't go ruin everybody's childhood memories.
Just tell me if I'm wrong. Willy Wonka is a child molester.
Well, there's a story that says that Gene Hackman decided in his first, when you first see him in the movie, to come, when he comes out from behind the door and he sort of wobbling on a cane and he has that big limp and then he tosses the cane aside and does
starts
a somersault.
Dancing
right?
area.
He chose to do that on purpose so that everybody would know never to trust him as a character. Like, you can't believe a thing he says or does.
That's right. Aww. Yes. One of the
that was his character
one
choice.
Of the qualities of that sort of personality.
He sets you at edge, on edge the entire time.
Yeah. All right. See? Yeah.
Dark.
Just you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think you will find. Yes, Phil was right. This guy, Willy Wonka. Okay. Willy Wonka.
So are we going to space or are we not?
Oh,
no.
Yeah.
We are.
Oh,
in we're going to space in a handbasket. Yeah. what else do we have? We were talking drones last hour, a new technology. Another new technology that's coming, besides the rockets and the elevators and all that, is the self-driving cars. And they're going to be here sooner than we expect. Well, you're looking a little peaked.
Well, apparently, they're saying these self-driving cars may or may not happen because apparently it could cause a lot of stomach issues and upset for 6 to 10% of all users.
Really? 6%?
Yeah, 6 to 10%.
Well, that's not a lot.
Well, but they also said that this very same thing happened with the virtual reality gaming.
Mm-hmm.
You know, remember how they had like that helmet?
Oculus, what's it called?
Rift.
There you go.
It's like in the early 90s, and this is like the next big thing. But apparently, a couple of the testers were like, they got headaches, they felt nauseous, and the thing kind of just fizzled out. So
yeah.
Who knows what's going to happen with this?
Well, we can't stop the hand or the march of technology because of 6% of the people.
Well.
No.
Well, my thing is, they're saying that if you're reading, watching movies or television, texting or working while you're in this car,
mm-hmm.
you have more of a chance of being sick. And my point is, well, if you can't do that, then you might as well just drive.
Yeah, why not? Or try calisthenics while the car's driving itself. Try that.
Hmm. Did you see, as I said before, I was watching some of the Masters this week, and they kept showing the commercial for the new Mercedes self-driving car, and what they would do is they would just show a car, and they chose PCH, driving down PCH, but you saw it from the windshield view, and it kept telling you, this is what it's like to drive in a driverless car and take you around PCH.
Well, see, some of the cars, the Tesla, for instance, they already have the smart cruise control. Which figures out where the other cars are, and it slows down and speeds up based on where the other cars are around you.
Mm-hmm.
So they already have some of this driverless stuff going
cool.
on. And the cars that parallel park themselves. That's driverless.
I am proud of my parallel parking skills. I want to hang on to those.
There. Yeah, me too. I still put my hand behind the passenger seat, and I look all the way out to the rear window when I'm in reverse. I refuse to look at that dashboard cam.
Yeah, I couldn't do that.
Yeah. Or that monitor, that screen backup monitor. I'm not into that. All right, so apparently at the airport now, Brooke, there's an added benefit to going through the TSA screener line.
Sorta. Well, okay. So there's this guy in Denver who has been accused of getting a little handsy with the male passengers going through the security checkpoint, and he has a female accomplice that helps him get away with this.
Really?
Yes. Well, yes. She says she's helped him about 10 times. They have he has admitted to approximately 12 times. And they have like this kind of this system. Like,
well, what are they doing?
Well, this male TSA agent would spot somebody in line, another male that he would find attractive. I'm assuming he is probably homosexual. And he would sort of look, he would give this look to the female attendant who is in charge of the computer system.
Uh-huh.
And apparently, if she indicates on the computer if it's a male or female passenger going through, it changes the parameters of the rules of where you can be searched. So she will put in it's a female when it's a male. And apparently, because of that, he has a little bit more freedom of where he might lay his hands.
Well, because of human error, isn't he supposed, isn't his job to know where he can touch and not touch a male or a female?
Yeah, but it's a female. See, look.
But that's no defense.
No, a female doesn't have anything dangling around. So if he gets into that dangle zone, he's going to be groping you all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Is that what we're talking about?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Who sang that song, The Dangle Zone?
I don't know.
Was that song?
Was that Kenny Loggins?
Oh, yes. I think that's the one.
Yeah.
There's a highway to the dangle zone.
Yeah, right. All right. So is he in trouble? He got caught. He's in jail now?
He's in trouble. I do not.
Well, good, too, right? I mean, you can't be doing that.
No.
Well, no, of course. You absolutely cannot be doing that. But apparently this was reported back in November, and it's taken like 3 months for any action to really start.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's still sort of underway. Nothing is confirmed or...
Mm-hmm.
Or, I don't know, official yet.
Yeah. All right. Well, while we're talking about affection and love and all of that, there's if you ever go to a wedding and you're at the reception, it's impossible to get out of that place without hearing this song.
When a man loves a woman,
Am I right? Who is that singing there, Chris?
That's Percy Sledge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just a classic song. One hit wonder?
No, not really. I'll give you a little bit of his background. He passed away, by the way. Percy Sledge, yes. The originator of this song, When a Man Loves a Woman.
That's such a good song.
Died of natural causes at 73. He was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in 2005. Why? Not because he was a one-hit wonder.
Yeah.
He had a bunch of other hits, but of course, When a Man Loves a Woman towered above them all. Who doesn't know that song? And you wouldn't know any of his other ones offhand. But
I wouldn't, yeah.
But there's R&B aficionados that do know his other stuff. When a Man Loves a Woman hit number one in 1966 and has been a part of the lexicon ever since. But you want to hear a crazy story about Percy?
Yeah, sure.
All right. So when he was younger, he worked as a hospital orderly while moonlighting at night. You know what I mean? He'd go practice his singing routine at night with a group of other R&B singers. And two of the Esquires over there at the hospital helped him with a couple of the chords from the song When a Man Loves a Woman. So now, in a fit of generosity, over there with those guys one evening, he gave them the writing credits to the song When a Man Loves a Woman.
Really?
He gave them the writing credits to that song.
And he got bupkis.
He never saw one dime.
No.
From the writing royalties from that song. He said it's the worst decision he's ever made. But he's not bitter. He says that if God wanted it that way, he'll leave it that way.
Yeah, and so.
But he could have put all his kids through college just on the writing credits alone.
So this week he complained about it one more time to God, and God said, "That's it. I'm taking you."
Right. Yeah. Well,
now's the time.
Well, maybe he went up there and ended up finding out the reason for it.
Yeah.
He probably made those other two guys' lives a little bit better than
how
they
about
would have
that?
Been.
See, everything comes around. Here's a question for you: who's more important member of your family? Your pet or your mother-in-law? America's answer next on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot. Available now at Walgreens.
I want to tell you about a spectacular dining experience. It's Portsacall Waterfront Dining, award-winning service and cuisine with a view of the dynamic L.A. Harbor from every seat. Enjoy daily sunset specials as well as the South Bay's best bottomless champagne brunch. The outdoor harborside patio is a perfect setting for happy hour every weekday from 3 to 8. Portsacall Waterfront Dining. For reservations and directions, visit portsacalldining.com or call 310-833-3553. All right, thanks for tuning in. It's Phil Hewlett and Friends. We have a website, philhewlettandfriends.com. Go check it out. Find out all the different ways you can listen and find the one you prefer the most. And by the way, if you listen on iTunes, which a lot of people do. In fact, I think that the largest majority of people who listen to this program listen on iTunes. When you're done listening to the show, would you do us a favor and just give us a nice rating at the end? You know, they give you the five stars. You can hit the fifth star, the five stars, and then leave a little note. Wouldn't that be nice? Just do a little something. Like that guy who, Percy Sledge, he handed over those millions of dollars to his buddies at the hospital, and all you have to do is just leave us a nice little note on iTunes.
Yeah, just give us five stars and write us in your will. No big deal.
Yeah, that too. Now this is a question that's way harder to answer than it should be, right? Who's a more important member of your family, your pet or your mother-in-law? Okay. Now, this obviously is for the married folk out there. Believe it or not, in a new survey, the family pet won.
Oh, no.
22% of people say their dog or their cat is a crucial part of the family versus 21% who said their in-laws are. Crucial part of the family. Wait a minute. Had there not been the crucial participation of your in-laws, you would not have your spouse.
Do these people have children? Because all of my friends who have children I would say their in-laws are extremely important to them and crucial.
Now here's
by that you mean babysitting the children,
yes,
right?
Yes, helping out. Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, here's somebody else who likes to who actually prefers to babysit your kids in many cases. Grandparents actually did beat out pets, but not by much. 26% said grandma and grandpa are a key part of the family.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't it weird how they word it? Crucial and key. All right. So,
and then in-laws versus grandparents.
We can get along without grandma and grandpa. We can get along without the in-laws, but Fido, no, man. we got to have Fido when we get home. If he's not there, my day is not.
It makes me feel less crazy, I have to say. Because my dog was definitely a crucial part of my life.
Was? What'd you do to it?
Oh, she died.
Oh.
Long time ago. 3 years. 3 years. 3 years ago. Almost like in 2 weeks.
But naturally, not at your hands.
Correct.
Oh, okay.
Well, sort of.
mm-hmm. What? Oh, gosh. But you know what? Mother-in-laws take a hit in the comedy and whatever. I mean, most of the time, the mother-in-law is really a nice lady. And sure, there's some dragon ladies out there, but fine. I think they're the minority. I think most of the mother-in-laws out there or mothers-in-law are wonderful ladies. I think that's the case. And a lot of it has to do with how cooperative the wife or the husband, whoever in-law it is, how patient and cooperative and cordial that person is. So if, you know, I think that's who sets the stage, is the spouse, you know. When you're meeting your husband's mom or your wife's mom for the first time, you set the stage.
Yeah, I think we think of the stereotype from comics back in the day that would say the mother-in-law or father-in-law would come in.
Yeah,
and
always the
maybe
butt of a joke. Yeah.
You try to be a little bit more controlling over their lives. And
yeah.
But I have
that must
I have
be where
some,
the stereotype comes from.
I have some real-life personal friends with some nightmare in-laws, so it does exist. But you're looking at two single people, so I can't speak too much about, you know, in-laws.
Yeah.
Well, I have a story about a mother-in-law and an armadillo, if you want to hear it.
How does that work?
Yeah.
Which one is crucial to the family, the armadillo?
Well, it is the family pet.
Oh.
54-year-old of Lee County, Georgia, this guy, he spotted an armadillo in his yard. Just Sunday night. And so over there in Georgia, they encourage you, if you see varmints like that, you're just supposed to shoot them. You know, it's like an infestation. So this guy grabbed his 9mm pistol and took a shot at the armadillo. But the bullet actually ricocheted off the armadillo's shell. You know, they have that little armored shell that they have. After it ricocheted off the shell, it hit a fence, traveled in about 100 yards through the door of his 74-year-old mother-in-law's house, into her recliner and nailed her in the back with the 9mm bullet. You laugh, but
I'm sorry.
this is like a scene out of Final Destination.
Yes, yeah. The thing had to bounce off, you know, four different objects and five different directions. She was taken to the hospital. She is going to recover. The armadillo wasn't so lucky. He died from being hit with a bullet.
Oh. But it didn't penetrate his armor.
No, it must have. If it didn't penetrate it fully.
Jolted him so hard.
Mm-hmm.
Man.
Knocked the life out of him.
He could have done that had he tried.
Yeah, and it doesn't look like the guy's going to be facing any charges for accidentally shooting his mother-in-law or killing the armadillo, which is legal to do anyway.
Yeah, I think what we've discovered here is a new game of mother-in-law horse.
All right, here we go. Off the fence post. Through the double pane window.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. Hey, remember the striped dress? The whole controversy over
You mean the white and gold dress?
Yeah, the white and gold dress. Yes. It was white and gold to me.
I think I was blue and black.
You were blue and black?
No. It's a white and gold dress.
I'm pretty sure it was blue and black.
No, no, no.
It was blue and black. It was blue and black.
All right. So the latest thing is, and it's not nearly as viral as the dress, but is the cat walking up or down the stairs. Have you seen this picture?
I have not.
All right, it's on the show fun page at philhewlettandfriends.com. I want you to go look at it and tell me, is the cat going up or down the stairs?
The cat is obviously going down the stairs, Phil.
Yeah, well, I'm looking at it right now. At the moment, it's going, I just blinked and now it's going up.
No, it's going down the stairs.
Is it?
Phil, it's going down the stairs.
Will you just relax?
Remember how crazy people were getting over that over that dress? I thought fights were going to break out. Dude. Yeah. We'd have to get, you know, justice of the peace involved.
What? And marry people?
Yeah, that too.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Justice of the peace.
Yeah.
I don't think so. But are you looking at it?
Or the Justice League.
Show fun. Here we go.
There. I'm looking at it right now. And it says up or down. Is the cat going up or down? And I'm looking at it. And okay, at the moment it's going. No, wait. Now it's going down.
I'll tell you, it's going downstairs. I can tell you why it's going down the stairs. You want me to tell you why?
Why is the cat going down the stairs?
I'll spoil it for you.
Oh, it's going up.
And I'm not even looking at the picture. You see,
it's going down.
You see the little line at each stair where the what is called the stringer or landing of the stair is sticking out.
Yes, he's cheating.
He has a construction explanation.
He does. That's right. That's not fair.
But it's true.
Okay.
So yeah, the cat is going down the stairs. I hate to ruin it for you, but check out the picture because it'll blow your mind.
Yeah. At first it was up. Now I see down.
See, that's right. Because if you're going down, you would trip every third step.
The landing. And if you had that little thing sticking out on the way.
It's not code.
That's correct. Yeah, you couldn't even build stairs that way. Come on now.
But
yeah.
Chris, you're totally missing the point. You're using logic. to answer a question.
All right. Well, should we have the picture removed from the show fun page since it's bogus?
No, I think we should still let people have fun with it.
Yeah. But you just ruined it for everybody.
Yeah, I think we do.
Call me the spoiler.
All right. Now let's do humankind a solid here. And Brooke. We are all concerned about the obese people out there.
Well, yeah.
And for various reasons. We don't want them to die an early death.
No.
We know that they're enjoying their meal a little too much, but just the same. It's costing society in health costs and all of that. So we're all in this together at some point or another. Unless they get a reality show and they need a crane to pull them out of their bed, it's not entertaining to us. So let's get these people fixed in a hurry so that they're going to live longer and a happy, healthy life. Have I made myself clear?
Yes.
Now, is there a cure for obesity or not?
It looks like one might be coming pretty soon in the form of a genetically modified bacteria.
What?
What? Yeah, they're using E. coli, and they're modifying E. coli to basically suppress the food craving in people. And apparently this might last for like 12 weeks at a time. Take a pill every 3 months, and boom.
You hear that, obese guy? Are you first in line to get the E. coli bacteria?
Anything other than eating less food, I suppose.
Oh,
yeah,
man.
Well, that would be just way too simple.
Exercising?
You might as well check into the Bates Motel and see how things go. Hey, imagine you're on a trip, it's getting late, and you don't have a hotel reservation, and you're too late to book a space at the RV park. Never do that. So what's your only choice? Of course, it's the neon vacancy sign ahead. Do you see it? We're talking motels, that's right, with our travel guy next, right here on Phil Hewlett and Friends. All right, tough guy, you found this show. It's Phil Hewlett and Friends. I'm Phil. Chris Martin is here, and Brooke Peterson is here. And we love getting your emails and your voicemails and your tweets and whatever else. We're on Twitter, at Faf Show. We're on Facebook. Like us. You could search for Phil Hewlett and Friends. .com. And we were talking about hotels, and imagine you're out on the road, and the only radio station you could pick up plays this song.
There's some big black cloud blowing it from the west. I've been driving all day long, I sure could use some rain.
That's right, good buddy.
There's a motel up ahead where I can unwind.
I love the yodel.
Cause I sure love thunderstorms and neon signs.
Oh, look at that. Isn't that song is so bad it's good, isn't it? I mean, it just has a certain delicious twang to it. And Gary Warner is here. He's our travel guy. And and that was a song and a half right there.
Yeah, that's I think that's the Wayne Hancock version. But there's another version by Hank Williams III, and that's that twang that you hear in there.
Yeah.
That's old Hank's way of singing.
Hank III. Huh? Hey, haven't motels all been converted into places where people either live or hookers take their johns?
Yeah. I mean, you know, that's sort of the way that the motels are these days. I mean, you know, as I have mentioned many a time as a graybeard, that, you know, things are different than when I grew up, but, you know, Lady Bird Johnson was the one who killed off motels.
What did she do?
She came up with the National Highway Beautification Act.
Oh.
And part of what they did was, along with the Eisenhower Freeway Act, which built these big, like, Interstate 5s that went around things like 101 and Highway 1, she basically made it so that the freeways were supposed to be beautiful, and they didn't like things like gas station signs and highway signs and stuff like that, so they got rid of them. But, you know, the motel had this sort of like weird arc of a short time, and like so many things, Phil, as we know, California, birthplace of the motel.
No kidding. Where?
You can still actually go and see the very first motel in the world. It's the Milestone Mo-TEL, and that's in San Luis Obispo. It's now called the Motel Inn. And there have been on and off attempts to reconstruct it over the years, but it opened up in 1925 on Highway 101. And places like Highway 101 and Route 66, that's where you find motels. If you drive along, say, Colorado Boulevard or Foothill Boulevard in Southern California, you'll see these motor courts back there. A lot of them are mostly gone.
Yeah.
And yeah, you're right. Most of the motels have done one of two things, Phil. They've either become, basically single-room occupancy places for people who can't afford them.
Flop houses for druggies.
Flop houses. Or they become chains. Although the chains go back, places like, Travelodge. Travelodge started out as King's Court Motel in San Diego. Ooh. And the very first Motel 6 is still in Santa Barbara, along with the only, by the way, Sambo's.
I eat there every time. If you want a great breakfast in Santa Barbara, right there along the beach, not far from the pier. It's a great spot. Yeah.
Yep.
It is. Now,
with a lot of apologetia about, the name. They're trying to show how Grandpa really wasn't trying to do anything bad about it.
Yeah.
Because the name killed it.
Now what qualifies an establishment? And we broke almost into a fight before the program started trying to figure out the definition of a motel.
Oh, come on.
No, I'm serious, because you mentioned Motel 6, and I'm thinking, well, Motel 6 is more like a hotel. Because I think of like the Bates Motel as a hotel. I mean, as a motel, just like
it's very, very simple.
One story. What is it?
No. You take the word.
Yeah.
Motor.
Uh-huh.
And hotel.
Okay.
And what do you get?
I get that. I
motel.
Get it. Yes,
yeah.
but
that's
we're talking
what a motel is.
We're talking amenities, though, right?
Now, yeah. Today, there's an attempt basically to deny that they're motels. The word motel is not something that anybody uses. They're all inns or expresses or these sort of things.
Yeah.
So the kind of places, the Hampton Inns, the Holiday Inn Expresses, the Comfort Inns, which, by the way, was one of the earliest motels, Quality Inns, one of the earliest motels, none of them like to use that name anymore because of that tag that we have out there. The few that still hold on to it are places like where I spent last night.
Oh.
The Timbers Motel in downtown Eugene, Oregon. $65.
Yeah.
Great bed. Uh-huh. Nice TV. I watched Jersey Boys. Mm-hmm. I had a refrigerator for all my stuff.
Any critters?
A lot of room. No.
No critters.
Completely clean. Great spot. Now, the only reason I'm there is I have a rental in Eugene right now. As you know, I've been in the Northwest, and I've been kind of exploring. And to save money, I made Eugene as sort of my headquarters, and I rented a small place. And I went out to get some firewood last night at about 10:30, and I was helping this guy load the firewood in the dark. And somewhere along the line, my keys fell out.
Uh-oh.
So it's 11:30 at night, and sort of like that Wayne Hancock song, you saying, I sure am tired, and I want to. So I had my wallet with me, and I went down to the Timbers Inn, which is down here in downtown Eugene, and for $65, got a really nice room. And I'd heard from a lot of locals that that's where they send their friends. They don't send them out to the expressway, out to I-5, out to the more high-priced places.
Yeah.
And it was great.
Yeah.
And, there's, another place that I just love. Because some of these places have come back.
Yeah,
is the Wigwam Motel.
Oh, that's in
San Bernardino.
Yeah, I have yet to go there, and I suggested it on a couple of occasions to my wife and my daughters, and I got almost a furious. Yeah. Are you out of your mind? Mm-hmm. No.
Here's the problem. Here's the problem with the Wigwam Motel in Rialto.
Rialto, California.
It's actually right on the border of Rialto and San Bernardino, and they both fight over who has it. I'm from San Bernardino originally, though I lived in Rialto, so I'll stay out of that fight. But anyway,
okay.
It's a it used to be a place that had a sign that said, "Make it in a teepee."
Uh-huh.
And I can remember driving by when I was a kid. Not when I was a kid. When I was a kid, it was a nice motel. In fact, my parents took us there in 1965. But over the years, it became a place where, the pool was drained. There was a shopping cart in there. It's in an industrial section. But it was bought by an Indian family, a South Asian family, who really turned it back into a just wonderful motel. It's a great place because it's part of the whole Route 66 thing now. It's on Route 66, and it's one of three motels that are left in the United States that were part of this, what was once, I think, 9 or 10 motels that were these concrete teepees. The best preserved one is in Cave City, Kentucky. And if you ever want to have your family experience the teepee motel thing,
yeah,
just if you're in Kentucky, north of Bowling Green, near Mammoth Caves.
Didn't what's his name this, take a Sissy Spacek in the Space Chick or Space Chick?
Space Chick?
In the Coal Miner's Daughter. Didn't they go to those?
They may have gone there. There's also one in Holbrook, Arizona, on Route 66.
I just saw that recently. Okay.
Yeah. Hey, you know what?
It's sort of in the middle of it. That one's sort of in the middle, and it's not the greatest area in the world, but it's a classic spot.
So you go inside, and there's what, a cot and a flame pit?
Well, you know, a cone is not the perfect shape for a room. I'll tell you that.
No, it's not.
There's basically what it is. It's pretty much like a room with a bathroom. The bathroom is usually in the back because it doesn't really fit the teepee shape, even though teepee is in there. There's a bed and a TV a few other things. It's sort of a one of a kind experience. It's very nostalgic, but yeah, we're more used to the amenities of the Hilton Garden Inns and stuff like that. But yeah, you're still now, you can be out in the middle of nowhere and pay $100 for those places.
Now, Gary, our producer Brooke Peterson is here today, and she's on the program. And
hey, Brooke,
she had a theory as to what differentiates a hotel from a motel. And Brooke, it has to do with the doors, right?
Yeah, for me, if I can enter my room from the outside, then that's a motel. If I have to go inside and enter from a hallway, that to me is a hotel.
That is an important thing that a lot of the newer motels or motor inns or whatever they like to call themselves do. Yeah, they have that. They're sort of like miniature hotels. You can still drive up and have a parking space right outside of your room, but there's only one in and one out way. One of the things that motels got a bad reputation for, some people like the privacy, but some people don't, is that people could come directly to their door.
Yeah.
And I remember staying at a place called the Pocono East Motel many years ago, and a guy drove his Harley into his room three doors down and worked on the Harley all night.
Yeah.
But the manager was, way down the other end, so he didn't know this was going on.
It's like Fonda and Nicholson are going to cruise right up and go into your motel room.
So here's the thing, is that there's probably, I would say, maybe 4 or 5 dozen really great independent motels left in the United States. The rest of them are what we think they are.
Yeah. Motel 6 is impressing me lately, though.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
Oh, you went to a nice one recently,
right? I've been to like 3 or 4 in the past year in my travels, and 2 of them were downright like modern and hip and cool
clean. Yeah, that's why these chains came along, was an attempt to standardize the things. Either first of all, there were places like Best Western, which were basically organizations. You could have a different looking motel at every different spot, but if it was a Best Western, you knew it was going to reach a certain standing. Motel 6 was an attempt to actually take a design and replicate it over and over again across the United States.
Yeah.
And the first one, like I said, is still in San Diego, and I think it had its 50th anniversary a few years ago.
Yeah, I like character, so that you're going to find that with a one-off more than you will a chain. So, but if you go to the one-off, Gary, and we'll make this the last question. What should you bring to your stay at a motel to ensure you have what you need to survive the night?
The AAA guide.
Oh, is that it?
Yeah. AAA guide, everybody loves, all their little, I'm sure the AAA guide's probably still has an app and everything like that.
Yeah.
But look at the AAA guide, 2 stars, 3 stars.
Mm-hmm.
Independent motel,
yeah,
you're going to be fine. You're going to have a good time because AAA still goes out there and actually bounces on the bed and looks for the cockroaches and all that kind of stuff. If you go on Yelp, the owner may have gotten every one of his relatives from Arkansas to write up a review about how great the place is.
Yeah, true.
So AAA guide, Okay. That's what I do.
And
you know, when things are good, 3 stars. When, you know, having a little bit of a hard time on the cash, 2 stars.
Yeah, I got you. All right, Gary Warner, thank you very much. We'll talk to you again.
You take care. Still get out on the road.
Still in, yes, in the Northwest next week?
Still in the Northwest next week, I think. Although, you know, I'm a surprising guy. You never know where I'll be, Phil.
Good. Ooh. Where in the world is Gary Warner?
Where in the world? Oh, gosh, please. That's another person. He makes a lot more money than me.
Yes, he does. We'll hunt him down and find him for you. We'll serve him on a platter. Thank you, Gary.
Take care.
All right. Up next, let's see. Let me just double check. We promised free ice cream, didn't we? That's next here on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot. Available now at Walgreens.
I want to tell you about a spectacular dining experience. It's Portsacall Waterfront Dining, award-winning service and cuisine with a view of the dynamic L.A. Harbor from every seat. Enjoy daily sunset specials, as well as the South Bay's best bottomless champagne brunch. The outdoor harborside patio is a perfect setting for happy hour every weekday from 3 to 8. Portsacall Waterfront Dining. For reservations and directions, visit portsacalldining.com or call 310-833-3553. All right, thanks for listening to the program. It's the final segment. Don't leave yet. Never leave early. Hashtag never leave early. That's what I say to the hockey fans.
Do you say hashtag when you say that?
I do on the microphone at the public address. I say hashtag never leave early. It's good advice, really, for the home team, at least, for the home fans. And there's a reward today if you're a fan of ice cream. Isn't
there
that right?
There is. Yep. Today, Tuesday, February 14th, is Ben & Jerry's 36th annual Free Cone Day.
Yay! What do they put in the cone?
Ice cream.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
You don't just get to chomp down on the cone.
Yeah, well, it's just ice cream. They're not going to give you a cone full of Ben & Jerry's hot dogs, which they're also known for.
Yeah, waffle cone or one of those
just a small sugar crisp cone. And until 8 p.m. today, you can stop by any participating Ben & Jerry's on the planet. You can choose any flavor you want on the house. There's also an online poll for your favorite flavor. And do you guys have any guesses at what is leading the poll? What flavor of Ben & Jerry's?
Mint chocolate chip.
Cherry Garcia.
Oh, yeah, they have the fun names. Chunky Monkey.
You guys are both close. Chocolate chip cookie dough leads the way. Chocolate fudge brownie and Cherry Garcia are following closely behind. Right. And the most interesting part about them giving away a projected over a million scoops today.
What's that?
There's no problems with going back for seconds, thirds, fourths, fifths, sixths, sevenths, as many as you want. There's no fine print on this giveaway.
We don't even have one around here, do we? You're just teasing me.
I know. I don't know if there's any. I don't think there's
any.
Yeah,
you go around the country and there are clusters of them in certain parts of town. But Southern California. I think we have one in Santa Monica. I think
there's one in Cerritos.
Not Pasadena. That's all I care about.
I don't know.
All the ice cream you can eat. And if you're really hungry, another way of going about it is just dig through the dumpster outside of a restaurant.
No kidding.
Sometimes you can get your meal that way.
There's some gourmet food in there, huh?
Yeah. Speaking of which, there's an Oklahoma restaurant owner who noticed that someone had been going through their dumpster at nights. They saw bags torn open, food taken out, stuff like that. So the owner did something that is being praised on social media. She said it hurt her to see someone have to do that, and she left a letter in the dumpster that said the following. To the person going through our trash for their next meal, you are a human being and worth more than a meal from a dumpster. Please come in during our normal operating hours for a classic peanut butter and jelly sandwich, fresh veggies, and a cup of water at no charge, no questions asked. Your friend, the owner.
Oh, so what? You get a nice four-course meal, something like that, with some cheesecake for dessert and the whole thing?
No, Phil, it's a peanut butter and jelly sandwich with some fresh vegetables and a cup of water.
Are you kidding me?
But I think peanut butter and jelly is like one of the things this restaurant is famous for. It's not just any maybe they cut the crust off
that sounds,
something like
that. Sounds cruel.
Used to.
Although if you do have the chunky peanut butter, you do need a glass of water nearby. Otherwise, you might choke on that stuff.
Yeah, and you know it's better than like the rotten apple core and whatever's at the bottom of the dumpster.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, have you been invited to some weddings lately?
Yes. I have. Yet. I was invited to Jay Campadonia's wedding, actually.
Ooh.
No kidding. That,
you know that's going to be a party.
Yeah.
I wasn't.
Well, okay, fine. he may not have known you were the producer, frankly.
Yeah, I was the booker lady, I think you called me. Yeah.
All right, so, but here's the thing. What, you know what people are doing these days? They're not getting married up the street from where they live anymore. It's like they're going to Mozambique, you know, and they expect everybody else to follow them there and pay for it. Isn't that what the way?
If you really love them, Phil, then you will find a way.
I just say at this point of the game, stop the madness. RSVP say, there's no way in hell I'm spending a dollar to fly from here to another place to see you two get married. Send me a video. I'll wish you well. And there'll be a gift, you know, from the registry waiting for you on your doorstep when you get home.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Stop the madness. So here's why you better, you know, have a cash bar at your wedding, too. Your guests are spending a fortune, and we have the average. American Express just released the results of their annual study on the cost of weddings. And in 2015, you will spend an average of $673 to go to a wedding. Mind you, not yours, not your sister or your brother's, just a wedding. $673.
Does that include the gift price?
Well, I'll tell you what it costs, but it is, by the way, up 14% from last year, almost double from 2012. That cost is spread across airfare. See, these destination weddings. Hotel. You got to stay in a hotel, right?
Mm-hmm.
Food. The gift. And, you know, a lot of people in that, you know, requisite $40 gift. Other people, they fork out the hundreds of dollars for a gift, right?
Yeah.
If you want to buy...
My airplane ticket is...
If you want to buy more than the plate, you know, in a place setting, you got to fork out, a couple $100. Mm-hmm. And clothing.
Mm-hmm.
People tend to want to buy clothing to look nice for the wedding. A study also found 43% of people have decided not to go to a wedding for financial reasons. 36% have taken on debt to go to a wedding.
I'm in that predicament right now, and I love her so much, but man, it's kind of rough.
Yeah,
rough.
I just think, sure, you want to go get married somewhere, take the family, pay for the family to go, and then have like another party for all your friends and family when you come back out.
Yeah, don't put the burden on us.
I'll tell you, as a guy, I could really care less about watching the ceremony.
I love weddings personally. The ceremony, you're right. That's one thing that's sort of a solemn moment, I guess. But but I've never been to a bad wedding. They're always fun.
The ceremony's not a spectator thing for guys. I think the ladies like watching the
all
ceremony.
Of it. It's just all so positive and fun and love. Everybody loves each
other.
Oh,
yeah.
So
I like the reception.
Sure. Well, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we tried to make my wedding a little entertaining. Like the guy, officiant, the priest or the pastor or whatever he was, put me in handcuffs. And my best man wrote the words, help me, on the bottom of my shoes. So when we kneeled down, everybody saw those. So there was a little entertainment going on.
I went to a magic wedding recently.
That was kind of really?
Fun. They had a magician be the, what do you call it? Not the priest, but the...
Did he make all the ex-boyfriends disappear?
I hope so. For their sake, I hope he did. But it was fun. All these theme weddings. People really get into it. It's not just about, you know, I do, you do, I do, I do, you do. No.
Yeah.
Now it's like a big
thing. Don't break into a, you know, Thriller dance or something like that in the middle of the reception. I'm over that, too. Okay? Hasn't them been played?
Choreographed weddings.
Yes.
You don't like those?
Am I a curmudgeon about this stuff?
No. Little bit.
You have three daughters. You better get used to the whole idea
of
weddings and reception.
I know a guy at the courthouse. Just go over there and get a document signed and stamped and all of that.
No.
Hey, we love your comments. Click contact at philhewlettandfriends.com. We're on Twitter at FAFShow. Facebook.com/PhilHewlettAndFriends. Leave us a voicemail on the website. Thanks to our executive producer, Mike Stark, our producer, Brooke Peterson. She's here in the studio. Our theme song is composed and performed by Russ Monson. For Aaron Myers, who's back on our next program, Chris Martin, I'm Phil Hewlett. Can't wait to talk with you next time right here on Phil Hewlett and Friends.
In sports, speed is everything. When it comes to headache relief, speed is the only thing. Introducing Goody's Headache Relief Shot, the all-new liquid fast formula. Just screw off the top, down the shot, and knock back pain for fast, long-lasting relief. Leave headache pain behind with Goody's Headache Relief Shot. Available now at Walgreens.
Here's a great idea for your next outing. A cruise of the L.A. Harbor on a Spirit Cruises yacht. Whether you have a large party, a company outing, wedding reception, a reunion, or you need the perfect setting for a romantic evening, Spirit Cruises offers everything you need to relax and enjoy your time on the water. For a limited time, enjoy Sunday brunch at Portsacall Waterfront Dining right next door, and the first Spirit Cruises Harbor Cruise of the day is free. For more information, call 310-548-8080 or visit spiritmarine.com.